Hello, and welcome to the Women in Action Sports Network Conversation Space. This is Alba Pardo, and today we're going to talk with Mel Cheng. Mel Cheng is a dear friend of mine. She's an enthusiast of action sports and challenges. Mel is born in the UK, and after a brief five-year stop in Berlin, she's now based in the beautiful small village of Golling in Austria. And during the day, she works at the design or during the week, she worked at the design agency Kiska. But in her spare time, she runs the community called She Dares. Mel enjoys sending it downhill in the local bike park, paddleboarding, snowboarding, or hiking in the mountains with her wife and dog. She loves hot pink and hates celery. Today, we're here to talk with Mel about daring. This community that she started because she wanted a personal challenge, and how through her life she's just put herself in perhaps uncomfortable positions and still done it anyway to try out whether she liked one thing or didn't. She's gonna talk about her journey through tech and transitioning to action sports, and how targeting something that you really want requires commitment and just doing it, even if you're scared. She also will talk very honestly and openly about breakdown and burnout and what does it mean, and how to pick up the pieces, recover it, and continue the journey of daring and doing. I hope you really, really enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And without further ado, please let's welcome Mel.
Cool. Thank you for having me. I'm very, very honored to be here.
So Mel, tell us your story. Who are you? Where are you from?
So my story, I mean, as you just mentioned, I'm Mel and I'm originally from the UK. Funnily enough, I was always kind of into sports, but never action sports. And I got into action sports quite late, actually, through my wife. My wife taught me to snowboard when I was about 22, I believe. I fell into a career of tech. I honestly don't know how. I was always just curious as a kid, pulling wires and stuff out of things. And I remember a program called, what was it? Well, there was ICQ, which was like the messaging thing. And then there was like Netscape, which was an old browser where you could, I think it was either in ICQ or Netscape or something, you could create your own backgrounds and this DHTML stuff. Anyway, I started getting into tech, and then somehow I fell into this tech career. I didn't study at all. Fast forward a few years, a few country moves, I've led different technology teams and stuff. And then I fell in love with action sports in the mountains because Sam, my wife, showed me them. Learned to snowboard, loved it, and then moved to the mountains. Actually targeted a job in the mountains because at one point we were driving 16 hours for one weekend, for basically 1.5 days, so that we could snowboard. And I got a job in the mountains. So then came down and somehow fell in love with summer activities. So then turned into a bit of a biker.
Yeah, I remember when I first met you, you were working at Nokia. And you were this super enthusiastic, super technical. We didn't have a clue what you were talking about. You know, you brought this bunch of sensors and you were showing us like, yeah, but we can put it on a snowboard. And I'm like, wait, what? It's like, we can put it on jackets and we can do all of this crazy stuff. And I'm like, who is this woman? and what is she talking about? And then from then on, you kind of just, yeah, felt like we basically, I remember you were just starting to snowboard and you know, you went from, yeah, snowboarding and being fast to just being like so good. I was like, how did she do it? And equally with mountain biking, if I remember correctly, one of the first times you ever downhilled
we were together and I had gone a few times at that moment. So, you know, that day it felt like I was really good. I was so much faster. A few years on, we go back again together and I couldn't even see your shadow. I was like, what happened to Mel? And these translates a bit of what you did in terms of your career. Tell us about this, you know, falling in love and actually targeting a job into the action sports, how you did that transition. I mean, you still kept it somewhat in tech, but how did you transition, you know, from going to TomTom Nokia to ended up where you ended up?
Yeah. I think honestly, I spent over 10 years in the tech world, building websites, building apps, leading cross-development teams in London and then in Berlin. And whilst it was really, really interesting and we were utilizing new technologies and stuff like that, I started to realize how much I loved being around the mountains. And I was just spending probably like 10 to 12 hours a day with friends, but like real geeks, you know, talking about tech. And then I was thinking, you know, we could use this for something really fun as well. Like, we don't need, just need to build like these useful platforms. Yeah, for sure we do, but we could build it for something fun for us as a consumer. And actually, one of the things that we wanted to do was basically, I mean, this doesn't sound very appealing now because it's been done, but this was what, 10, 12 years ago? How long have I known you now?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
No one was talking about it then. And we were thinking, you know, how cool would it be to understand how you ride on your snowboard, you know, so that you could improve, so that you could get better, so that ski and snowboard schools can learn how their students ride. You know, we could use this and build a service that's super useful and also fun. You could gamify everything, you know, check what tricks you did, and then you could publish it online. Of course, that's all being done now. I still don't think particularly well, but it is still being done. And yeah, and I remember finding Women in Board Sports at the time where I met you. And I was like, oh, I've got to go there because there's just going to be like so many amazing women that I can talk to. And, you know, maybe I can show this stuff to and maybe they'll be interested. And I did. And I just started surrounding myself with people who I thought were kind of like-minded, but I was bringing in a new world to kind of complement that a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you girls and, you know, you were all so cool. You know, you all had these really, really cool jobs in action sports and you knew everyone and all the pro riders. And I was like, God damn it. I'm in tech, how boring, you know? And when I was going to bars and meeting these people, they were like, oh, hey, what do you do? And I was like, never mind. And I felt ashamed about it, you know, because I just wasn't part of the crew.
Oh, my God, no.
And so I remember speaking to one girl there who also, actually, she wasn't part of the action sports world, but she was obviously friends with you guys. And she said, look, just target a company, you know, and just ask them, like, you know, show what you can do, but show, you know, just be you, actually, because not everyone in action sports wants to hire people in action sports all of the time, right? Because you need fresh eyes, fresh ideas, whatever. And of course, I looked around and Red Bull was in Salzburg in Austria. And I was like, right, that's it. And I applied there. I got rejected about 6 times. I applied for all sorts because they're not a technology company, or they weren't at the time. I mean, they're becoming a bit more now, but yeah, I applied for lots of different roles. I mean, once I applied for social media, I hadn't really done any social media stuff, but I did. And I think there was one, it was like a project manager. It was all jobs that I could have worked out how to do, but I applied and then I got rejected. And then there was one job that came up and it was a product manager. Again, I hadn't really had experience there, but they invited me for a phone call and yeah, I spoke to them and then it worked out. And I was there for a couple of years. So I was bringing a bit of tech to the mountains, which was good.
Before we move a bit more into your career, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you got into tech yourself, but you didn't really study. For me, one thing that I've always admired about you was how confident you were about what you were doing and how much knowledge you gained. And, you know, for me to go to a company such as Red Bull, but also the ones before, like Nokia, they're huge. How do you get the confidence? You know, often these certifications or these titles give you that confidence that you're good for that job. Even sometimes you have no experience, that doesn't mean anything. But how do you get that confidence to be like, I can definitely do this job, or I can definitely work it out how to do it? Where did you get that confidence from? Where did you get that push from?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't really know exactly how to answer that, but what I will say is when I was a lot younger, and like I had it was like an admin assistant job when I was 17 or something. I actually still applied for loads of other jobs, just random stuff, random. So one was like a desktop editor, like a Photoshop kind of thing. One was working in security cards, one was working as a personal assistant somewhere, and I applied for those jobs to get an interview so that I would be put out of my comfort zone and like be asked questions that I was uncomfortable with. I would purposely put myself in that situation. I don't really know why I did that, but I think that gave me the confidence now to talk the talk, you know, and just be like, yeah, I can do that, you know.
You were daring yourself already. Interesting.
Yeah, it was almost like a thing that I had to do. Maybe someone gave me the idea, I don't remember. But pretty much all through my 20s, I was always interviewing. Even if I wasn't looking for a job, always interviewing. Just to see and build connections.
Wow.
Yeah. So in terms of actually like getting the confidence to know that I can do something, I'll tell you a very funny story. My brother actually used to kind of design stuff in Photoshop. He wasn't ever a designer, but like he knew a lot more computer programs than I did, some more designy stuff. So he used Photoshop and he'd used Quark Express at the time, which is now InDesign.
Yeah.
And I went for a job as a junior graphic designer. I knew nothing about graphic design, nothing. Anyway, this guy gets me into this interview and he's like, oh, you know, so you know how to use Virtual Form? I'm like, yeah, yeah, whatever, easy.
Bring it on.
And he's like, oh, okay, cool. I'd never opened the thing. And then he was like, so he basically picked up a magazine and he was like, so you could lay something like that out. And I was like, it's been a while, but sure, no worries. And I remember the salary, it was like £8,000 a year or something. It was so low. It was for this tiny, tiny local company. I mean, they must have been desperate because honestly, I was lying through my teeth. But the thing was, I got home and my brother was laughing and he was like, what are you going to do? Like, if they offer you the job, you've never opened Photoshop. And I'm like, I know, show me. I was like, show me what to do. It's like he's opening it and I'm just drawing boxes. Like I have absolutely no clue. And when they offered me the job and I went in and they were doing like Burger King posters for the local Burger King and stuff like that. And I just sat there and I grabbed the mouse and I'm on a Macintosh computer, which I'd never used before back in the day. And they had these squares, like in InDesign, you've got the picture boxes and then you've got the text boxes, which you draw and then you lay out. I was just drawing those, wondering what they did. And I'm not joking at all. This truly happens. I swear on my life, it truly happened. And the guy who hired me, he basically showed me how to do it. And within 2 days, I knew how to do it. So honestly, my philosophy is just take action. Just do it because you'll learn. You'll figure it out.
Wow. And I didn't know that. And I can vouch for how good you became at that particular task, because was it 10 years ago, I launched my own snowboard magazine, a digital magazine, and you not only coded the whole website, but you also designed it. So you must have learned a thing or two since then. Maybe if you would have told me that story then, I would have not asked you to help me out.
I mean, you know, I think one of the key things that you've got to think about is that when we were born, we were never born with skills, right? So we started from a blank slate. So if you don't do something, then how are you going to know how to do it? Like, you just have to practice it. And I never fell in love with graphic design. I can do some stuff in Photoshop. I can do some stuff in InDesign, but I don't love it. And you learn a bit. And then you go, actually, I'm just going to move on. I don't want to know anymore because I'm just not interested. But you only know that by doing.
So about moving on, you work for about 2 years in Red Bull, and you were in a position where you were managing, like, I remember, like, something like 50 something countries, or working with 50 something countries.
It was like 37 languages or something. Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, a huge, huge project. And you kind of just moved on. What happened next?
I'll tell you another funny story. I kind of got fired from Red Bull almost. It was kind of a mutual agreement, they call it here in Austria. Mm-hmm. But basically, I just didn't get on with management there. I assumed that I was hired to, you know, do a job, but actually they just wanted someone to say yes and to do what they wanted to do. So that just didn't really fit with my philosophy. I wanted to make changes for the better. So I moved on. I found a cool company called Kiska, which is based in Salzburg as well. And at the time, they were doing kind of digital websites, but they weren't doing much digital product and digital product interaction. And when I talk about that, I mean, like, you know, when you get a physical product with lights on it, with a digital screen on it, or like Amazon Alexa or Echo, that you can talk to it, you can wave at it, you can, you know, yeah. They weren't doing products like that. And so I was hired to basically build up a team to build up that service. And I was there for about 3 years. Built up a team of interaction technologists, creative technologists, UI designers, UX designers, which was great. Had an amazing time. However, I think it was almost like my dream job, because I was prototyping everything. I mean, I was getting to play with cars and motorbikes and stuff like that. And I got too immersed in it, and the rest of my world fell behind me, I think. You know, I kind of stopped thinking about my wife and my sports and things like that, and I burnt out essentially. So, which was a really rough time.
How do you realize you burn out?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think you do. Well, for me, what was the exact signs? Okay, two things. One, I shouted at one of my employees. And then the other one, I burst into tears when I was doing a PDC, like a development, personal development plan for one of the employees. I just burst into tears when she asked me a question. So they were definitely warning signs. And also other warning signs were like, I was making ridiculous mistakes. So if you booked a meeting or a car or something or a flight for a day that you think you booked it for, and then you check because you're a bit fuzzy and you're not 100% sure, and then you check again, and then you really check and you're like this, okay, done. Then you forget that you've booked it, completely forget. You look in your calendar and then you're like, oh my God, I've got to go. Then you go, you get to the airport, whatever, get the car, and it's the wrong day. Then they're the warning signs. Mm-hmm. However, you still don't know that you're in the burnout until you basically can't function anymore, which was for me just not getting out of bed, crying all the time.
and going from being a super active person to that, how did it impact you first off? Like, I mean, of course it has long-term impacts and it's a process to manage that, but first of all, what do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah, what do you, like, you're crying in bed and you're like, because I doubt that you knew that you burn out, like, no, what do you think? No. You think you're sick? What do you think?
No, I just thought, I don't, it's weird. I don't even know now what I thought. I didn't think I was sick, that's for sure, because I didn't believe that that was really a thing. Before burnout, I don't think I believed that burnout was a thing. I was always the one to just shake someone and go, come on, just get up and do it. Because my parents kind of taught me that almost.
Pull yourself together.
Pull yourself together, get up, you can brush yourself off and get on with it. I mean, I was hugely depressed. I couldn't talk to anyone. I lost the ability to actually speak. And I'm not joking. Like, I could not string a sentence together. I stopped eating. I was crying when I was walking my dog. And then I just remember being like, what the hell is wrong with you? Actually, there's nothing wrong. Your life is okay.
Mm.
Pull yourself together. Why are you feeling like this? And the more I would go into that, the worse I would feel, because I was giving myself a hard time.
Yep.
And it took me, I mean, it's probably taken me until about 6 months to go to feel normal again, normal, to feel like myself.
So once you're in that super bad state and, you know, you can literally cannot get out of bed, how do you start getting on with it? How do you start finding a path to a solution? What's the first thing you do?
Get a therapist and a coach. So I got both. The therapist was really, really good in the short term because I had to be put on meds. That's a bit of a rough journey because it's always trying to find the right meds for, and, you know, I took multiple. I think I've got 6 different antidepressants and like sleep things, anti-anxiety, blah, blah, blah. So getting that balance right. And that's always a bit, you know, you need a couple of months to regulate on that to help you at least function during the day. And then getting a coach really helps for forward thinking actions. So like, what are you going to do now? But I don't think I could have had a coach in that moment because I just couldn't process any thoughts. Like, it wasn't, I just wasn't functioning.
You weren't ready to listen yet. It's like when a kid has a tantrum and it doesn't matter what you tell them, like they're not listening.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally.
Okay. So you got a coach and then, you know, fast forward, you go through this bad process, you can't speak, you can't function, you start recovering. And what are the key elements that are kind of pulling you back to the normal life or to feeling more like you again? But that you're, of course, not just doing that, you're also building on top of it. So you've founded a community for women. and, you know, just as a side hustle, you started life coaching certification and you're going again back to work. So how do you do that? And what's actually pulling you to get back to being you again?
Yeah. So I have to give thanks to my coach. That's Jim from Untamed. He's been amazing. I found him randomly, actually. I was looking for, I don't know, there was like a video about becoming a nomad or whatever, because I couldn't actually imagine me going back to work. More to the point, I was a bit scared about facing everyone. But I think he just helped me see where my strengths were. My strengths are connecting people. I have a big network. I enjoy being around a fun-loving community. And also I was passionate about kind of pushing women to get the best out of themselves. You know, I've always been that. I've always been that motivator, someone who wants to inspire each other. And I feel so much joy when someone else does something for themselves. You know what I mean? If they're happy, that makes me super happy. So, through over, it was nearly 2 years of coaching with Jim, I came to the place where I was like, okay, well, I want to dare everyone to push themselves daily. And I want to found that. So I did. She Dares was set up. And as a part of that, I want coaching to be a fundamental aspect of it, because I think that's really, really important for you to understand your values, your beliefs, your strengths in order to push yourself. Because, you know, not everyone is like me. I'm quite outspoken. I'm quite bold as a character. And not everyone is like that. And it would take a lot more for someone to dare to go and get a mullet, for example. Like that was one of my things on the podcast. I went out and I got a mullet, or I dressed in someone else's clothes, someone completely opposite to me. I wear skate clothes, you know, and I wore a knitted dress with this see-through frilly blouse with high heels and tights. I mean, that is just not me. And I had to walk around the office the whole day in it. I was so uncomfortable, but actually it was fine, you know, and I would do it again now because it's not so scary that I've done it.
It's so good to see you're back at that place and that you're actually putting yourself in that place intentionally, because for the long time I've known you, literally you were screaming, I'm so scared of this, I hate this, I don't know what I'm doing. And you were doing it anyways, always throughout your, you know, life. You've always been that person. So, you know, see the burnout kind of displace you from that, but you're getting back to it, and not only getting back to it, but you're intentionally doing it and knowing that you're doing it and doing it anyways and inspiring others to do it is so great to see. So talk to me a bit more about She Dares, what you do. As you said, you're also doing a podcast, like another, it's like there's another layer. It's like, wait, can you do more things? And then you complain you don't have time. Are you kidding? Talk to me about the whole project and what the goals are, and so people can understand what you're doing.
Honestly, I will tell you, there is no plan. You know, I kind of just winged it. And I think that was one of my posts on Instagram recently. Everyone is just winging it, because not everyone has this 5-year plan all detailed out. And, you know, one thing could come in the way and then you get derailed, and then, you know, what's the point in having the plan anyway? So I'm just going day by day, and that's all I can do. In terms of, I would say, what it is, I mean, it's not too dissimilar, you know, from Women in Action Sports. It's less focused on the sport, but it's definitely a community. And it's a community where we will kind of run things, run some events, some workshops that you can learn from each other, because I think everyone in the community has something that we can learn from, 100%. And also, the learning aspect, the coaching side of things, that will be a big part of it. We'll be doing some one-to-one and group coachings with people who want to be coached through anything. It could be business, it could be, you know, anything. And yeah, it's just about having a community and a space where we can talk and help each other. And we've got some really exciting things in 2022, at the beginning of 2022. So I've got a couple of sessions coming up where we'll have some brainstorming sessions for women who are kicking off a new business, something like that. So if they have an idea, they can come to one of our, we call it She Spark sessions. That's about as far as I've planned that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And then I just lost my train of thought, but what was the
2022 plans?
Oh, The podcast. You asked about the podcast.
Yeah.
So we just completed series one. And again, honestly, I started that. I got a producer because I couldn't edit things. I definitely don't have the time to edit or anything like that. I just record it and then it's done by her. But I turned up for the first one. It was with one of my best mates and it was just a chat. I had no real questions. The only question that I had was, tell me a time where you broke out of your comfort zone. Because I thought about doing a podcast and I thought, right, I could plan this out and I could go for a year and I could think about all these questions that I'll ask and I will do this, do that, get all these guests and, you know, have these amazing whatever. And I thought, actually, I'm just putting it off. That's like a form of procrastination to me. You know, I'm just thinking the more I'm planning, the more I'm detailing this is procrastination. So just do it. So I literally just booked a Zoom call. I sat on the Zoom call with my mate Claire and we just had a chat.
Yeah.
And you can hear that in the podcast. It's probably too casual for a lot of people, but that's okay. I'm not going to appeal to everyone. It's fine. And you know, most of them are just chats. I turned up fairly unprepared, just asked the questions that came to my head and did it. And I think that's a really important message because I think, you know, because of social media, we see all these really polished pictures, these really polished videos that people spend hours on. And then behind closed doors, you know, you have no idea what's going through people's heads, right? Just put it out there. Like Gary Vee, I'm not a big fan of him, but like, I mean, he posts pictures of, I don't know, his garden. Like he gets a million views because he's just voicing whatever. You know, you don't need
the truth is powerful. Life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just do it. I mean, in the words of Nike, yeah, it is. Just do it. It sounds so easy. But we hang ourselves up so much on perfection and plans. And so, yeah. So the podcast, I've been recording season two already, and that will be launched in January as well. So the end of January. That one's a bit more prepared than season one. A little bit.
You've learned. And you're exactly. just doing it. And you're just doing it and learning along the way.
Exactly. I might get to season three and go, actually, I don't mind podcasting. I might stop, but that's okay too, you know?
I must say that the first conversation I heard, the first podcast with Claire, I was surprised how it felt really structured and really well prepared to me. So, see? You know, there you go. You never know what's on the other side. You never know what's going to resonate. And this is something we've talked with Justine as well in other sessions here is that you never know what the takeaway of the other people is going to be. Exactly. How are you going to inspire them? What is going to resonate with them? So it's just important to share it and show yourself as your true self. So
100%. I would just say on that point with Justine, because it's funny when I've been coaching and I've had some clients, you know, I've asked what their takeaway is at the end of the session. And honestly, like they tell me something and I'm like, really? I hadn't even thought about that. Like I thought it was about something completely different. And that's why I totally agree with Justine. It's amazing.
Tell me a bit about the life coaching, because of all my friends that have now become either yoga teachers or life coaches, you were probably the last one I thought I would hear of getting into. And all respects, like I think they really needed, I mean, a lot of them myself, like I use coaches and therapists and teachers for everything. But I would never thought, and this is maybe judgment, that you would go into coaching for becoming a life coach. And it just surprised me. But it also surprised me that you got a job as a Photoshop editor for a magazine. So, yeah, I'm just going to shut up now.
I don't know. Wait, I've just lost my train of thought again. What happens?
Well,
that's
look,
you. Oh, about
yeah. How is that experience of training as a life coach, and you're doing already some sessions with you call them patients
or you call them clients. Okay, so I definitely also did not plan on becoming a coach, but I think through my journey of burning out, so before the burnout, as I said to you before, like I didn't really believe in it, and it's not to say that I didn't believe in depression, but I didn't really understand it, right? So I didn't understand the impact that it would have, and I thought at the time before it, I thought it was mostly, you know, just like get up, shake yourself off and, you know, be that kind of confident person and you'll get through it. No, you are clinically sick. You're ill. Like there's nothing you can do. It's like you've broken a leg. You can't walk on your leg. Your brain does not work. Can't function. So I think through that process of then me burning out and coming out the other side and talking about it, that was a huge thing for me. I couldn't talk about it for a long time, but when I did start talking about it, the more people started telling me their stories. And the more I opened up, the more they opened up. And I was like, this is so powerful. I'm actually getting goosebumps now thinking of it, because, and I think the world is moving towards that. But, you know, when I grew up, my, you know, 20s, it was, you never really spoke about any problems or things that were going on in your mind. You know, you were always just like, we're going to carry on, we're good. And now I think we're a lot more open to talking about things. And by doing that, I started seeing the impact that it was having on others. So me telling my story, people were like, huh, okay, I see kind of warning signs here. And, you know, I was telling people how I coped with certain things, how meditations helped me, still I'm not really a woo-woo kind of gal, but affirmations, telling myself that I am awesome and that I am confident. I don't love doing that. It feels a bit forced for me, but for sure it makes a difference. And so by telling people that and coaching them through their, you know, negative self-talk really brings me a lot of joy because it helped me. And then you can see them moving through the process as well. So one example is that every single day when we're talking, I still do it. I'm like, I'm not very good at talking. I don't have a very good radio voice. Oh, I get really nervous on lives. I don't look into the camera very much. I'm a bit shaky. The more you tell yourself that, the more your story is being built and the more you believe it. And actually, even if you don't believe that you're the best at, I mean, who is the best at Zoom interviews or whatever? You tell yourself that and then you'll start to act. It's almost like fake it till you make it. You know? I am awesome. I am confident. I can articulate my words. It's okay. It's okay to say that. You don't need to tell the whole public, but, you know, to tell yourself that in the morning when you wake up does bring you a lot of confidence. So seeing how some of those tips and tricks help some clients also see their value, that brings me a lot of joy. And so
do you see yourself as a full-time life coach in the near future?
No, definitely not full-time. No. I do have clients and I do want to continue doing that because that's almost like that's my value and that's my gift, I guess, to the world. I'm giving back because my day job now, I've taken tech and I've gone into like digital marketing. I'm not passionate about that. I'll do it and like I'll do it to the best of my ability, but it's not something that I'm like, oh yay. You know.
So is that a transition?
What, the digital marketing?
Yeah,
from my tech career.
Yeah, no, well, you know, you're not passionate about something and you've always been very passionate at everything you've done, so I doubt you're going to stay with something that you're not very passionate about for very long. Do you see it as a transition or as a base now to kind of move on with everything else you're passionate about? Kind of like an engine that allows everything else to run?
Maybe, maybe. Because, I mean, I stopped doing tech because I fell out of love with tech, not because of the burnout, but more so because of the way that tech is being used today. It's just quite wasteful. And I don't love that. There's so much like physical waste, but also so many crap services out there that are just not needed. You know, like who needs to know how you're brushing your teeth or how you're brushing your hair with my digital chipped hairbrush? Seriously, like, come on, get a grip. And then most of these products, because they're digital, because they have software in them, they have a life cycle of 1 year. And then that goes into a landfill. It's just disgusting. I just can't. So moving out of that into digital marketing, now I'm just marketing the product. but no, in all seriousness, I need a job, and I like to have like a bit of a day job to pay the bills, but also to keep my mind active. But I definitely see myself moving towards something that provides more value and gives back to the world. Whatever that looks like, I don't know, but for sure She Dares will be a part of it. But I don't see myself in the next year giving up my day job for now. So,
well, in your own words, it's okay not to have a plan, so just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
So out of all these process, which is, you know, I kind of boiled it down to a few phases to oversimplify it, but what are the biggest takeaways that you've just to summarize a bit what we just talked about, like what are the biggest takeaways you've learned or tricks that you would recommend? You know, I can start with the one that you said, just do it anyways, even if you don't know, just do it anyways. I think that's the biggest one I get from you. And it started early on with your job interviews, random job interviews, till now. But also,
go on.
But also other takeaways, maybe not as general, but more specific, that you keep and cherish.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the feel the fear and do it anyway is a big one for me. So when you get that feeling in your stomach, oh, I don't want to do this, or you have a feeling of procrastination, or, you know, you just keep putting something off, do it. One tip I like to do is, you know, you have a big to-do list. And there's one thing on there that is like rolling over from the next days.
Yeah.
Instead of doing, a lot of people advise you on doing the smallest thing so that you can tick it off, so you can get like three things ticked off. Do the hardest thing. Do the one that you really don't want to do first, because once that's done, the rest is easy. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I practice that 100% all the time, but I like to think that I do, you know. Mm.
At least you think about it, which is, you know, step.
That's the first step. That's the first step, is awareness. Mm. I would say, a good one in terms of like for the burnouts. I don't know if you resonate with this, but quite often, you know, when you're running in the mill, right? You're going, you're 9 to 5, whatever your job, and you're like, oh, it's just really, really stressful today. Tomorrow will be better. Next week will be better. Next month will be better. No, it won't, because you have no idea what's coming next week or what's coming next month. It's going to be worse. So you need to find in that moment, in that day, to make things easier for you. Whatever that is, you have to drop some tasks. You have to raise your hand. You have to say, I can't do this today. Is it okay that we postpone it to next week? If you're in a job where, you know, you have a manager or whatever. Or you're just going to have to say, these things I don't do, you know. Mm-hmm. But putting something off just delays it. And you could delay it for a month. You could delay it for a year. You'll delay it until you burn out, because it will just get too much. So that's a big one for me.
How do you speak? I just came up with another question. But how do you speak with someone that you think is in the weeds of a burnout, or maybe he's not there yet, but it's getting there, or you know how perspective helps see where others are better. So mm-hmm. it's probable that you see someone getting burnt out before that person does.
Mm-hmm.
How do you communicate that to another person if you can? How would have you liked someone communicate with you if they could?
I think by not telling. So if someone's going through a burnout, I would never tell someone to do something. I would just be curious and ask questions about what's going on for them, almost coaching them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more curious you are, the more that they will work it out for themselves that they're going through that. If you approach them and you tell them, hey, listen, these are warning signs, like you're in a burnout, they'll be like, don't be silly. No, I'm not. Mm. It's all good. I'm carrying on. Yeah. That person needs to work it out for themselves. And so it's just about asking the right questions at the right time, I'd say.
How has, you know, sport and the practice of the sports you like and spending time outside help you to overcome that? Mm-hmm. And also for me, I feel like when you're in a place where you don't want to do stuff because you don't feel well, it's really hard to go out there and do it. And I know what you're going to say about it. It's like, just do it anyway. It's fine. Sometimes you can't. But, you know, once you start, it's a bit easier, of course. But what's been your experience with it and being so passionate about the action sports as well and practicing a lot of them yourself? How have you used them for, you know, yeah. your own health?
Yeah. I mean, actually, through my burnouts, it was summer. Well, the main part of it was through summer, and that was my mountain biking time. When you said, yeah, just do it anyway, when you can't get out of bed and go mountain biking, actually, I really struggled. I couldn't get out of bed to go mountain biking, even though I kind of wanted to, I think. Or maybe I wasn't even really thinking about it. What helped me in that moment was my wife. She was like, just go and cut something in the garden. She gave me like these trimmers. I'm not a gardener. I don't like gardening. It's boring. But she was like, just go and cut a few branches. She just got me outside doing something. I did it like twice and I was like, bored of this, threw them. Someone messaged me and said, hey, we're going to Leogang. Do you want to come? And I was like, okay, can you pick me up? And they were like, yeah, sure. They knew what I was going through. They picked me up, and that made it easier because then I didn't have to go and pick someone else up. I didn't have to call someone else. I didn't have to, you know, the barrier was lower. As soon as I was on my bike, it was like no problems anywhere, because you're so focused on that downhill trail, the jumps, the rocks, the roots, whatever. It's just so freeing. And I feel the same on a snowboard. I'm thinking about nothing else. Maybe about crashing or, you know, hurting myself. But generally, it's like I'm in that moment. And so that's all I cared about. And I would say doing that exercise, it gave me more energy. It made me feel alive again. Because I think the less you do, you know, the more you stay in bed, the more you don't do anything, the more you don't eat, you don't go outside, you just stop doing anything.
There's a lot of studies about this, like how the endorphins and the dopamine and all of the chemical process, but also, of course, if you're burnt out because you've done too much, you know, like having that blank space in your head definitely helps you recover. But also what resonates to me is not only the sport side of things, but also the community side of things. And we kind of go back full loop again into this community aspect, that you're not alone going through this.
You're right. Yes, you're very, very right. I think when I started snowboarding, you know, I felt part of this action sports community. I didn't feel alone. And I think that's why I loved it so much, because it was such a vibe. And you're right, it's exactly the same with mountain biking. You feel part of a family almost, because snowboarding on your own, yeah, you can do it. It's not particularly fun, you know, and mountain biking by yourself. Yes, you can do it, but
it's dangerous.
It's more of, yeah, it's more about the woohoos, you know, like, yeah, I just landed this, or I just, that's the exciting part of it.
There's a lot to be taken away from this conversation. And again, for me, the biggest takeaway is how you can fall in and out of love of a sport, of a job, of anything, as long as you keep doing it, and as long as you keep trying, and as long as, you know, you find the next challenge and do it, and remember that there's someone else there as well that can either help you or you can help them, and that you never know what's going on behind closed doors, that you never know what's going to resonate to them, and that just by being there and calling each other can help out a lot, and it's going to take you to the next step personally and professionally.
Totally. I think as well is to not overthink things. So I think we have this tendency to think
you and say
plan
that
things. Well, yeah, I mean, I do overthink things, for sure I do, but you know, so I've got a electric piano here that I'm trying to learn to play. If you want to learn to play the piano, just go and do it. I mean, you don't have to go and buy a brand new piano, you know, you could just get like a little whatever, but start now. Actually, I've got like a little comparison. So a mutual friend of ours, actually Clovis, years ago, he used to work with me in Nokia, and we both said that we wanted to learn how to skateboard, and there was a little skate park across the road, and he bought a skateboard, I bought a skateboard, and he went out every single lunchtime. He was terrible. He was absolutely terrible. He could, you know, barely stand up on the thing. I could kind of stand up on the thing, but not really do anything. And I didn't go out with him every lunchtime. He went out. He's an amazing skateboarder now.
Yeah, he's good now.
And damn, I wish I started back then. Why didn't I start back then? And now I'm jealous. Why am I jealous? I had the opportunity to start then. It's my own fault, you know. I'm not going to beat myself up about it. It just wasn't important enough for me at the time. So if something is important enough to you, if you want it enough, just do it. And if it feels scary, like there's a fine balance between it feeling scary and knowing whether it's important enough for you. But I'd say if it's in your head and it's been in your head for like 6 months, just go and try. Because what are you going to do? Wait another year and then wait another year and then never do it? And then you'll be like, well, I don't know if I was any good at that. Or and a lot of people, I think, come to me for coaching because they want to find their passion, or they want to know, you know, what they're going to do as a new career. Or just try lots of different things. I worked with a developer years and years and years ago. He's a world renowned artist now. He started stenciling women. And he does them on big buildings now. I mean, he sells his artwork, you know, for
months.
And he was a developer.
Right.
How, did you hear that? Sorry.
How do you know that you're not being reckless? You know, like when you're putting out of your comfort zone. I mean, I was having a chat the other day with Anflor, and and of course, you know, if you're a mountain free rider and you're on the top of Chamonix, the Bec de Roses, whatever, and it's dangerous. So the do it anyways, even if you're scared, often translates to sport, and backwards, you know, from sport, it translates to life. But there's always that point of, okay, you need to prepare yourself to assume that risk that you're going to take. But how do you make sure you're not being reckless? When I talked to her, she said, of course, you know, the mountain is dangerous and you have all these variables. And the more there are and the more dangerous there are, the more you prepare yourself to overcome them and to make sure that if something does go wrong, you have your plans figured out and that you have your escape routes and your safety equipment and a crew that knows what they're doing. So, you know, you just keep preparing better, and that's the like more and more, and that's the only way out of it, to still take a risk and not be reckless. But there's that point of risk still, that the element is still there. So if we translate that, or we bring that back to our life, personal life, professional life, everything in general, how can we prepare? How can we limit that element of risk, in a sense that you're not being completely reckless and just kind of mm-hmm. throwing yourself with no idea down the mountain, no helmet. Mm. You know yeah. what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say it's, I think I totally understand it for sports. So like, you know, if I'm standing on top of a drop, there's for my bike, there's definitely an element of risk to it, but I also know my level. And so I can be scared of doing it, but I also know when it's above my limits. And I think your body tells you that, like, really it does. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely got better at listening and reading my body and knowing when I can't do something. In day-to-day kind of life, I don't know. I was just trying to think of a time where it would have been reckless to do something. Overall, I think I don't see any kind of situations where it would be where you'd need to prepare, you know, too much. Maybe, okay, you want a job at Nike or something, and then you have this overwhelming feeling to go and stalk someone, you know, in the streets and like, and stop them when they're shopping and ask them to give you a job. I mean, it's not reckless, but it's definitely not going to help you. But I think you know in yourself what's what's right and what's wrong and what's going to kind of be helpful to you.
But okay, so, with, so let me rephrase that a bit. So can okay. you do you think burnout can be prevented, for instance, in this case? Do you think that by looking after yourself better, knowing that there's things that can get to you, like burnout, like depression, like anxiety, like all of these mental challenges and illnesses that are more in our current lives, you know, can we prepare ourselves better against them? Because they're really latent risks, I feel, in our community and, yeah. and in our society as well. And we have tools, like we have sports, we have the community, we have all these coaches available to us. Do you think that it is preventable to some extent?
I think it is preventable to some extent. I'd say everyone should definitely have a coach, because it's about creating awareness for yourself, right? I definitely was not aware of my thoughts and my feelings throughout my 20s and 30s at all. It's only now that I'm like, oh, that's why I do that. That's why my relationships are this way. That's why I communicate in this way. And by having that awareness, I think then you are able to read the signs better for a burnout. When you're in this washing machine cycle of just running through life, you know, I'm 20, I need a job, I'm going through university, I need a job, I need more money, I need a better job title, whatever, you're just running, right? And you want to make more connections and you think you have no time for yourself. But I think it's so important that you have that community or that sparring partner, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a coach, whether it's just a community. I think it's something separate from your friends. Yeah, it's really important to have that so that you can bounce thoughts, feelings, things that are coming up for you, to realize warning signs, and you have that peer to help you. Yeah.
I feel nowadays it's not so much a question of what happens if I get burned out, what happens if I get anxiety, what happens if I get depression. It's when it's going to happen and in what circumstances and what are going to be, you know, the coping mechanisms around you, whether it's friends and family, a therapist, a sport, whatever it is that you have around you. And so I think, again, like with everything else that we're trying to do, it's very important to have somewhat representation, someone experiences that of other people that we can learn from. So it's very valuable for you to share with us your story in the way you have, and so, you know, openly and so open and honest, because it shows how it's happening, or it's happened to all of us in a way or another. Well, thank you, Mel, so much for sharing your story with us and having sharing this time with us and inspiring us so much.
You're welcome, as always.